are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. Broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia.
You're listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional engineer, professional futurist, and sometimes occasional sessional instructor of future studies at Simon Fraser University. And this is a weekly show that looks at future trends and issues and important items that affect your daily life and will be affecting your life into the future. Welcome to the show. We're continuing our look at the book, The Biology of Belief, Unleashing the Power of Consciousness, Matter, and Miracles by Bruce H. Lipton, PhD. Last show we were looking at conscious parenting, parental parenting, the power of the subconscious mind. I'd like to tell you about how I, who put myself in the category of those who were not prepared to have children, came to question my ingrained assumptions about parenting. You won't be surprised to hear that I started my reevaluation in the Caribbean, the place where my shift through the new biology took root. My reassessment was actually inspired by an unlucky event, a motorcycle accident. I was on my way to present a lecture when I went off a curb at high speed. The bike wound up upside down. Luckily, I was wearing a helmet because I sustained a major blow to my head when the bike hit the ground. I was unconscious for half an hour. For a while, my students and the colleagues thought I was dead. When I came to, I felt as if I had broken every bone in my body. For the next few days, I could hardly walk, and when doing so, I resembled a yelping version of Quasimodo. Every step was a painful reminder that speed kills. As I creaked out of the classroom one afternoon, one of my students suggested that it might help if I visited his roommate, a fellow student, who was also a chiropractor. As I explained earlier, I not only have never been to a chiropractor, I had been taught by my allopathic community to shun chiropractors as nothing more than quacks. But when you're in such pain, then you're in an unfamiliar setting. You wind up trying things you would never consider in your cushier moments. At the chiropractor's makeshift dormitory office, I was introduced for the first time to kinesiology, popularly known as muscle testing. The chiropractor told me to hold out my arm and resist the downward pressure he applied to it. I had no problem resisting the light force he put on my arm. Then he asked me to hold out my arm and resist him again while I said, "My name is Bruce." Again, I had no trouble resisting him. But now I was starting to think that the admonishments of my academic colleagues were right on the mark. This is nuts, I thought. Then the chiropractor told me to hold out my arm and resist the pressure while saying earnestly, "My name is Mary." To my amazement, my arm flopped down despite my strong resistance. "Now, wait a minute," I said. I must I must not have been resisting enough. Try that again. So we did. And this time I concentrated even more forcefully on resisting. Nevertheless, after repeating my name as Mary, my arms sunk like a stone. This student, who was now my teacher, explained that when your conscious mind has a belief that is in conflict with your formerly learned truth stored in your subconscious mind, the intellectual conflict expresses itself as a weakening of the body's muscles. To my astonishment, I realized that my conscious mind, which I had exercised so confidently in academic settings, was not in control when I voiced an opinion that differed from a truth stored in my unconscious mind. My unconscious mind was undoing the best efforts of my conscious mind to hold up my arm when I claimed my name was Mary. I was amazed to discover that there was another mind, another force that was co-piloting my life. More shocking was the fact that this hidden mind, the mind I knew little about except theoretically in psychology, was actually more powerful than my conscious mind, just as Freud had claimed. All in all, my first visit to a chiropractor turned out to be a life-changing experience. I learned that chiropractors could tap into the body's innate healing power using kinesiology to target spinal misalignments. I was able to saunter out of that dorm feeling like a new man after a few simple verbal adjustments on the quack's table, all without the use of any drugs. And most importantly, I was introduced to the man behind the curtain, my subconscious mind. As I left the campus, my conscious mind was awhirl over the implications of the superior power of my formerly hidden subconscious mind. I also coupled these musings with my study of quantum physics, which taught me that thoughts could propel behavior more efficiently than physical molecules. My subconscious knew that my name was not Mary and balked at my insistence that it was. What else did my subconscious mind know, and how had it learned it? To understand better what had happened in that chiropractor's office, I first turned to comparative neuroanatomy, which reveals that the lower an organism is on the tree of evolution, the less developed its nervous system, and thus the more it relies on pre-programmed behavior. Moths fly towards the light. Sea turtles return to specific islands and lay their eggs on the beach at the appropriate time. And the swallows return to Capistrato on a specific date. Yet, as far as we know, none of these organisms has any knowledge of why they engage in these behaviors. The behaviors are innate. They are genetically built into the organisms, and these are classified as instincts. Organisms higher in the tree must have more complexity, integrated nervous systems headed by bigger and bigger brains that allow them to acquire intricate behavioral patterns through experimental learning, known as nurture. The complexity of this environmental learning mechanism presumably culminates with humans who are at the top, or at least near the top, of the tree. To quote anthropologists Emily Schultz, Robert Lavenda, human beings are more dependent on learning for survival than any other species. We have no instincts that automatically protect us and find us food and shelter. We do have, of course, some behavioral instincts that are innate. Consider the infant's instinct to suckle, to quickly move his hand away from fire, and to automatically swim when placed in water. Instincts are built-in behaviors that are fundamental to the survival of all human beings, independent of what culture they belong to or what time in human history they were born. We are born with the ability to swim. Infants can swim like graceful porpoises moments after they are born. but children quickly acquire a fear of water from their parents. Observe the response of parents when their unattended child ventures near a pool or other open water. Children soon learn from their parents that water is dangerous. Parents must later struggle to teach Johnny how to swim. Their first big effort is focused on overcoming the fear of water that was instilled in them by their parents in earlier years. However, through evolution, our learned perceptions have become more powerful, especially because they can override genetically programmed instincts. The body's physiological mechanisms, e.g. heart rate, blood pressure, blood flow, bleeding patterns, body temperature, etc., are, by their nature, programmed instincts. However, yogis, as well as everyday people using biofeedback, can learn to consciously regulate these so-called innate functions. Scientists have focused on our big brains as the reason for our ability to learn such complex behavior. However, we should temper our enthusiasm for the big brain theory by considering that cetaceans, porpoises, and dolphins have a greater cerebral surface area packed into their craniums than we do. And the findings of British neurologist Dr. John Lorber, highlighted in a 1980 article in Science, is, quote, "Is your brain really necessary?" Also call into question the notion that the size of the brain is the most important consideration for human intelligence. Lorber studied many cases of hydrocephalus, water on the brain, and concluded that even when most of the brain's cerebral cortex, the brain's outer layer, is missing, patients can live normal lives. Science writer Roger Lewin quotes Lorber in his article. There's a young student at this university, Sheffield University, who has an IQ of 126. He has gained a first-class honors degree in mathematics and is socially completely normal. And yet this boy has virtually no brain. When we did a brain scan on him, we saw that instead of the normal 4.5 centimeter thickness of brain tissue between the vertices and cortical surfaces, there was just a thin layer of mantle measuring a millimeter or so. His cranium, in fact, is filled mostly with cerebral spinal fluid. Lorber's provocative findings suggest that we need to reconsider our long-held beliefs about how the brain works and the physical foundations of human intelligence. I submit in the epilogue of this book that human intelligence can only be fully understood when we include spirit or energy, or what quantum physics savvy psychologists call the superconscious mind. But for the moment, I'd like to stick to the conscious and subconscious minds, concepts that psychologists and psychiatrists have long grappled with. I'm grappling with it here to provide the biological foundation for conscious parenting, as well as energy-based psychological healing methods.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you're listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery. We're now going to take a short break and listen to a very important public service announcement.
When you come in an atmosphere of peace and working together in solidarity, there's no problem whatsoever of Israelis and Palestinians living together.
In the past 2 years, more than 3,000 Palestinian families have lost their homes to make way for Israeli settlements, roads, and walls. Working side by side, teams of Israelis and Palestinians are together rebuilding demolished homes and courageously building a bridge to peace.
One has to be optimistic. Otherwise, there's no reason for being here. If we can't help a little bit,
and translate that optimism into a little bit of action, then we're defeated. And all of us here refuse to be defeated.
You can help. To support the Rebuilding Homes campaign, visit rebuildinghomes.org or call 415-820-3204.
Welcome back. You're listening to CJSF, 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenari, professional futurist.
Welcome back. We are looking at the book, The Biology of Belief, Unleashing the Power of Consciousness, Matter, and Miracles by Bruce H. Lipton, PhD. We're in the chapter on conscious parenting. The next section is human programming. When good mechanisms go bad. Let's go back to the evolutionary challenge for human beings who have to learn so much so quickly to survive and become a part of their social communities. Evolution has endowed our brains with the ability to rapidly download an unimaginable number of behaviors and beliefs in our memory. Ongoing research suggests that a key to understanding how this rapid downloading of information works is the brain's fluctuating electrical activity as measured by electroencephalograms. The literal definition of electroencephalograms, or EEGs, is electric head pictures. These increasingly sophisticated head pictures reveal a graded range of brain activity in human beings. Both adults and children display EEG variations that range from low-frequency delta waves through high-frequency beta waves. However, researchers have noted that EEG activity in children reveals that at every developmental stage, the predominance of a specific brain wave. Dr. Rima Leibau, in Quantitative EEG and Neurofeedback, describes the progression of these developmental stages in brain activity. Between birth and 2 years of age, the human brain predominantly operates at the lowest EEG frequency, namely 0.5 to 4 cycles per second, or hertz, and these are known as delta waves. Though delta is their predominant wave activity, babies can exhibit periodic short bursts of higher EEG activity. A child begins to spend more time at a higher level of EEG activities characterized as theta waves, which range from 4 to 8 hertz between 2 and 6 years of age. Hypnotherapists drop their patients' brain activities into delta and theta because these low-frequency brain waves put them in a more suggestible, programmable state. This gives us an important clue as to how children whose brains are mostly operating at the same frequencies between birth and 6 years of age, can download the incredible volume of information they need to thrive in their environments. The ability to process this vast quantity of information is an important neurologic and adaptation to facilitate this information-intense process of enculturalization. Human environments and social mores change so rapidly that it would not be an advantage to transmit cultural behaviors via genetically programmed instincts. Young children carefully observe their environment and download the worldly wisdom offered by parents directly into their subconscious memories. As a result, their parents' behavior and beliefs become their own. Researchers at Kyoto University's Primate Research Institute have found that baby chimps also learn by simply observing their mothers. In a series of experiments, a mother was taught to identify the Japanese characters for a variety of colors. When the Japanese character for a specific color was flashed on a computer screen, the chimp learned to choose the right color switch. Upon selecting the right color, the chimp received a coin, which he could then put into a vending machine for a fresh treat. During her training process, she was holding her baby close. To the surprise of researchers, one day, as the mother was retrieving her fruit from the vending machine, the infant chimp activated the computer. When the character appeared on the screen, the chimp selected the correct color, received a coin, and then followed the mother to the vending machine. The astonished researchers were left to conclude that infants can pick up complex skills solely by observation and don't have to be actively coached by their parents. In humans as well, the fundamental behaviors, beliefs, and attitudes we observe in our parents have become hardwired as synaptic pathways in our subconscious minds. Once programmed into the subconscious mind, they control our biology for the rest of our lives. Unless we can figure out a way to reprogram them, anyone who doubts the sophistication of this downloading should think about the first time your child blurted out a curse word picked up from you. I'm sure you noted its sophistication, correct pronunciation, and nuanced style, and context, which also carried your signature. Given the precision of this behavior recording system, imagine the consequences of hearing your parents say you are a stupid child and you do not deserve anything, and you will never amount to anything, or you never should have been born, or you are a weak, sickly, weak individual. When unthinking or uncaring parents pass on these messages to their young children, they are no doubt oblivious to the fact that such comments are downloaded into the subconscious memory as absolute facts, just as surely as bits and bytes are downloaded into the hard drive of your desktop computer. During early development, the child's consciousness has not evolved through to critically assess that those parental pronouncements were only verbal barbs and not necessarily true characterizations of self. Once programmed into the subconscious mind, however, these verbal abuses become defined as truths that unconsciously shape the behavior and potential of the child through life. As we get older, we become less and less susceptible to outside programming with the increasing appearance of higher frequency alpha waves that range from frequency from 8 to 12 hertz. Alpha activity is equated with states of mind and consciousness. While most of our senses, such as eyes, ears, nose, observe the outer world, consciousness resembles a sense organ that behaves like a mirror, reflecting back the inner workings of the body's own cellular community. It is in awareness of self. Around 12 years of age, the child's EEG spectrum begins to show sustained periods of even higher frequency defined as beta waves, which range from 12 to 35 hertz. Beta brain states are characterized as active or focused consciousness, the kind of brain activity used in reading a book, such as this one. Recently, a fifth higher state of EEG activity has been defined, referred to as gamma waves exceeding 35 hertz. This EEG frequency range kicks in during states of peak performance, such as when pilots are in the process of landing a plane or when a professional tennis player is engaged in a rapid-fire volley with a challenging opponent. By the time children reach adolescence, their subconscious minds are chock full of information that ranges from the knowledge of how to walk to the knowledge that they will never amount to anything, or the knowledge, fostered by loving parents, that they can do anything they set out to do. The sum of our genetically programmed instincts and beliefs we learn from our parents collectively form the subconscious mind, which can undo both our ability to keep our arm raised in the chiropractor's office and our best New Year's resolutions to stop sabotaging ourselves with drugs, food, or alcohol. Again, I go back to cells. These can teach us so much about ourselves. I've said so many times that single cells are intelligent. But remember, when cells band together and creating multicellular communities, they follow the collective voice of the organism, even if that voice dictates self-destructive behavior. Our physiology and behavioral patterns conform to the truths of the central voice, be they constructive or destructive beliefs. I've described the power of the subconscious mind, but I want to emphasize that there's no need to consider the subconscious a scary, super powerful Freudian front of destructive knowledge. In reality, the subconscious is an emotionless database of stored programs whose function is strictly concerned with reading environmental signals and engaging in hardwired behavioral programs. No questions asked, no judgments made. The subconscious mind is a programmable hard drive into which our life experiences are downloaded. The programs are fundamentally hardwired stimulus response behaviors. Behavioral activating stimuli may be signals the nervous system detects from the external world and or signals that arise from within the body, such as emotions, pleasure, and pain. When a stimulus is perceived, it will automatically engage the behavioral response that was learned when the signal was first experienced. In fact, people who realize the automated nature of this playback response frequency admit that the fact that their buttons have been pressed. Before the evolution of the conscious mind, the functions of animal brains consisted only of those that we link with the subconscious mind. The more primitive minds were simple stimulus response devices that automatically responded to environmental stimuli by engaging genetically programmed instincts or simple learned behaviors. These animals do not consciously evoke such behaviors, and in fact may even be oblivious to them. Their behaviors are programmed reflexes, like the blink of an eye in response to a puff of air or the kick of a leg after tapping a knee joint. In subsequent programs, we're going to be looking at the conscious mind as the creator within. We're going to be looking at visualization of the information processing powers of the conscious and subconscious minds. And we're going to be also looking at the interaction between the conscious and subconscious mind. We're going to be looking at the subconscious mind as someone who keeps calling but no one answers. And we're going to be looking at a twinkle in your parents' eyes, conscious conception and conscious pregnancy. So please stay tuned for future shows. I promise you some interesting reading.
You have been listening to Future Talk on CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And Future Talk is a weekly show on important issues that affect you and your future. And this is Dr. Teneri, professional futurist, reminding you that if you're not willing to make the effort to invent your own future, then others will be only too happy to invent it for you. See you next week.
Listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
Hey, this is Eboshi from Cartel Madras, and you're listening to CJSF. Hello and welcome to Viewpoints. I'm Boris Chassaigne.